Welcome back to the virtual classroom. Kimberly Ring here, and I hope you had a great week. This week's episode is all about raising them around school. I'm especially excited about this episode because it's a two for one. That's right, you'll get to hear from two educators, a teacher and a principal from the same school. We will start today's episode with the administrator, Kelly Nguyen, who is now in her second year as elementary principal of Alabama Virtual Tri Academy. But when I talked to her, she had just finished her first year, and it was really impressive. She raised morale about 20% at her school. Her ideas are easy to implement, and it's like, yeah, why aren't we all doing that? Why aren't all schools doing that? I hope you'll listen and take back some of those ideas to your administration or maybe to your grade level and start implementing them there. And then after Kelly, we'll be talking to a teacher on how she raised morale in her classroom with her students. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's talk to Kelly. So without further ado, here she is.
My name is Kelly Nguyen. I am the academic administrator for Alabama Virtual Academy, the elementary school for K-5. I have been in the virtual environment this is ending my fifth year. I have 20 years of educational experience. I taught for 15 years in Georgia in the brick and mortar, and then we pulled up roots and moved to Alabama 5 years ago. And it was just an amazing opportunity that presented itself for me to begin. I helped launch Alabama Virtual Academy here in Alabama. I was the one and only teacher for kindergarten through second grade. I had about 60 students, and I worked alongside Kaylee Marble, who was starting the school, partnered with our district partner in Eufaula City School District. So I taught K through two that first year. I was the only one. I was new to virtual teaching, had 15 years of experience under my belt, but I felt like a brand new teacher all over again. And so we survived our first year and expanded through 12th grade the following year, hired on more teachers. I was so excited to have other people to work with and not be all by myself anymore. And I continued to teach kindergarten for the next 3 years. And I was a lead teacher for a couple of years. And then I moved into this role as academic administrator this year. So.
Well, congratulations. That sounds like quite a roller coaster. So,
it was.
but that's awesome. Yeah, I'm finishing my fifth year here. I just finished my fifth year as well. But I don't have near as much experience as you. I only came in with three. So, but I've heard that so many times, being new to virtual feels like a brand new teacher, which is one of the purposes of this podcast to begin with. Was I want people to know that they're not alone. And then anyone who, like right now, which was unexpected, but there a few of my listeners are not virtual, but want to be virtual. So it's my hope that through these conversations that we don't feel so alone and kind of what to expect coming in. Cause it does feel like a brand new teacher all over again. So morale, I don't know about your school, but my school, it's almost 70-ish% of teachers. We want to be here. We love being here. But we're not, I mean, according to that data, it seems like the goal is always to be 85, but we're not super excited to be here. So knowing Stacy and how much she loves her school, and she's always passively bragging about Alabama and how great it is. And what are you doing that is raising morale at Alabama? I know you said that you look at surveys and such. Could you elaborate more on that?
Our first teacher pulse check came in at around 60% morale at the beginning of the year. Myself and my lead teachers, I've got three lead teachers that work, they're part-time teachers and they're part-time lead. So they definitely have their finger on the pulse of their teams and still being in the classroom and being able to give feedback about decisions that we think about making. And So we do a lot of surveys and really wanted to create like that open door, feeling comfortable coming and being able to share feedback on decisions that we had made or suggestions that they had about making things better. We did about halfway through the year, or about middle of first semester, the feedback that we were getting was that teachers were very overwhelmed. Their classes, our small group classes were, targeted, focusing on our below basic students. They were running about 30 minutes, but they were back to back. And they really felt rushed, trying to get from one class to the next. So we took a look at our schedule to see how we could make that better. And so we went in and we combined our below basic and basic students into one targeted session for reading and one targeted session for math. And we extended the time to 45 minutes. So that kind of helped them. They didn't feel like they were having to run from one class to the next. They could really dig in and focus on that standard that they weren't wanting to address with our students, and still have that extra built-in time to have that time to go over the exit ticket with the student if they needed to, and didn't feel like they were like, okay, thanks, shut it down, go to the next class. You know, that you still have that time to spend with the students that were in there. We really focused on, I wanted to make sure our PD focused on what they needed this year, with our school goals being around targeted instruction and data-driven instruction. We had a lot of input and PD from our talent development team from K-12, so they came in and really worked with us and helped us get a structure together. And so the feedback I got from most of the teachers that was really helpful, to know the expectations and the layout and what the format of their classes should look like, which also helped with their structuring that 45 minutes to be very intentional with their students. We try and do fun stuff throughout the year. We did a secret. We do not have any male teachers on staff with us in K-5 through elementary school. So we did the Secret Sisters Club this year. We started it, I wish we had started it earlier in the year, but we started it at our November PD. That's one of the PDs that we do in person. And so we sent out a survey and asked anyone who would like to be a part of that. And we're trying to bring in that that thing you do in brick and mortar where somebody, they're your secret pal for the whole year, and they come in and they drop the little secret gift on your desk at some random moment or for holidays and stuff. So we were trying to bring that in. We had a lot of turnover in our elementary school this year. At the beginning of the school year, we had a lot of teachers that resigned, and we brought in a lot of new teachers. So we were trying to build up that family culture so that we felt like, that each grade level and even across grade levels, you felt like you could reach out to anybody and there was an open door for them to communicate. So we did the Secret Sister Club. We started that in November, and we learned how to anonymously send gifts through the mail because we didn't realize how tricky that was going to be until we started working with like Amazon and like, oh, even if you do a gift receipt, it tries to put your name on there. And so several of them got very successful with sending from the cute little boutique, the online boutiques, as secret anonymous givers. And so we did that throughout the school year. And then we were going to do our reveal at our in-person PD in March when we do our big expo and Capitol Day with our students. And of course, a pandemic hit and we weren't able to do that. So we did it virtually and we shared, and it was really fun to hear how some of those gifts just showed up at the right time in the mail for a lot of the teachers that participated in it. And so we're definitely going to try and start that at the beginning of the year, this coming year. Just giving them a voice, to know that they are heard and their input is valued. I'm coming from being a part of that as a teacher and now being an administrator. I try and hold on to that mindset as well. If I was still a teacher in the classroom, what would I want my administrator to know or to do or to ask? So that's been a big focus of mine this year, to try and to increase the morale. And we hit 80% morale at the end of the year. So, and we were very intentional when we had to replace our teachers. We made sure to replace them with our book study that we did last year as a leadership team was the ideal team player. And so we really focused on hiring those people that were hungry, humble, and smart. And with smart being like people smart. So just trying to build that, build those grade levels in those cultures with people who are just those ideal team players and wanting to support one another and support our students and put, you know, our students first.
So I'm loving all of this. It sounds like you have a healthy balance of, and I always, these words don't want to come out the way that I want to, but very intrinsic awards, rewards, and then also very eccentric. That word always wants to come out weird, but reward. So it sounds like you have a healthy balance of both. And would you say that both are necessary for a virtual world, or which ones seem to play the biggest role in raising that morale?
It's like you said, it's kind of a balance between both. We did, you know, some of the outward rewards that we tried to do were, especially towards the end of the year, and the teachers, like, they shocked me beyond belief. We, K-5 struggled all year long to be the ones who got the 95% participation in the growth assessments beginning and middle of the year. And I got really nervous as we got to the end of the year because our testing window was like the last full week of school. And we had to spend so much time doing makeups to try and get to that 95%. And I was like, oh, we're in the pandemic mode. You know, our schedule has changed because our teachers, another thing that we tried to do, our teachers had their children at home. And so we changed our class schedule and some of the requirements around how we were teaching class that last quarter of school to accommodate with the fact that they have become unexpected learning coaches themselves, or, you know, had no daycare for their younger children. So, you know, we had switched up our schedule to accommodate that. And some of our student, like our login, our on the big K-12 tracker, our student login had kind of dropped off with the 5 or more days. And so I got really nervous and I was like, well, what can we do to just really, you know, pump up the attraction to come and take your test, and, you know, what kind of incentives can we give? I had so many teachers that did the pie in the face contests. We have a Facebook page for our staff group on Facebook, and I got so tickled at watching all the husbands pieing their wives in the face because they had, and we did, we had several teachers that reached 100% participation. And then, you know, I tried to offer something, as the principal or the administrator, the academic administrator for the school. We did, pizza and a movie night. So if, you know, we took the top five, we drew five names out of the kids who, they not only had to log in and take the test, but they had to do their best. They had to show growth. And that's, and our teachers really worked at having conferences that week, the weeks leading up to that end of year, to talk to them about their RIT goal and what they wanted them to hit. So we ended up awarding, you know, five students with a pizza and a movie night, just Redbox coupons and, you know, Pizza Hut gift cards for them to go and have a pizza and a movie night with their families. But the teachers just really took it on. And I even did, a $25 gift card to Amazon for the teacher who had the highest percentage. We ended up having to do a drawing for that because, like I said, so many of them had like 100% participation. So I just told them over and over again, I said, you guys have just shocked me. And I was like, what was I worried about? I was sitting here going, oh my gosh, we're going to struggle like we always do. But K-5 was one of the first, you know, grade bands to hit 95%. And so it's different things like that, that some people are motivated with, you know, having that gift card, but some people are motivated with that, like wearing that imaginary badge of I got 100%, you know, I got my kids motivated to come. And so our teachers worked really hard to get that in, with those different types of motivators that we had.
I think in a virtual world, we have so many intrinsic, that's something I've noticed anyway, is that I'm motivated on my own already. So like, I have to work from home and make my own schedule, and I have to be motivated already in that way. And I wonder sometimes is if virtual is missing those things that you just mentioned, the sister club, the pie in the face, all those things. And I love that you're bringing those in, because that's what I feel is missing. And I'm so glad to hear that there is a way to do those things, but I'm also excited to hear that they're responding in the way that I used to in a traditional classroom, when we had things like teacher appreciation week or meeting our goals. And I'm going to steal that pizza idea, because I think my kids will be really motivated by that. So I know we're really talking about the teacher side of it, but I'm stealing that. And so I'm definitely feeling that.
It's super easy, because, you know, we think about what are things that we can send in the mail, you know, that's not expensive to ship or send to our students. And that was one of those ways that we could reward them and it not cost, you know, a bulky package in the mail or something. It's something that they could go and, you know, pick out and select whenever they wanted to.
Well, and it benefits the entire family too. Mm-hmm. So, it is a family, as someone, I forget who I interviewed it with, but, and I feel bad for not remembering, but she said it's such a family affair. Virtual education is such a family affair. And that reward doesn't just benefit the kid. It benefits mom, who made sure that he or she got into the class to take the test, you know, or make those academic gains. And that's something I wonder about too, is we don't have to talk about that because we're focusing on the teacher, but I wonder about that too. How can I award mom and or dad or whoever support that? So that you answered that question indirectly, because who doesn't love pizza other than my husband? I love pizza and I love movies, and that takes away cooking dinner that night for mom. And so I love that. So I did some research just on motivation, teacher morale, because I'm a nerd. But some of the things that causes low morale are like social problems, increasing in workloads, change in ed policies and mechanism, and then poor supervision. And that tends to lead to quitting, why teachers tend to quit. And now this research was based on brick and mortar, not necessarily virtual, but I imagine some of those problems are still the same. So it sounds like you have already found a way to decrease the social problems by building that community within through the Secret Sisters. I love that. I'm going to steal it. And but you also mentioned decreasing the workload. Now in Oklahoma and some other states, we have a Reading Sufficiency Act law, and it requires on some of those classes, it requires a certain number of students, like can't go over this many, can only have 10. So what are some other ways that maybe administrators could, and I know this sounds like I'm advocating for that, but just in case someone's out there listening and they need some ideas, what are some other ways that we could decrease the workload on teachers to help raise that morale, but still getting work done, getting everything done? This is just brainstorming. But do you have any ideas on that, on those kinds of states that can't combine the classes?
I guess. Well, and you know, we're fixing to hit, Alabama has passed legislation for next year that our rising second graders, our second graders that will be in second grade for 2021, when they reach third grade 21-22, we have a literacy act that's very similar to that they have to be on grade level in order to be promoted to the next grade level for fourth grade. So we're already starting to try and think about how to tackle that, and You know, I'm like in the midst of a pandemic and we don't even know what school's going to look like for a lot of brick and mortar schools in the state of Alabama that are hanging close to, you know, still to not, you know, push that back. So we're doing summer reading camps this summer. Our reading interventionists are working with our third grade students who scored within a certain range on the end of year assessment on the MAP. And so they provided some extra reading instruction for them these last few days after during our summer school. And then we also sent them out a packet where they're doing reading logs that they will turn in when they come back in this at the school year. But, you know, we're looking at ways to we implemented a PLC this year, my first year in this position. And we had, my teachers will tell you that we did have a lot of change this year, you know, new administrator, several different things that I implemented to focus on our academic excellence framework goals. And so we started out with a PLC. We went over all the, what that was going to look like at our back to school PD. And then we had a protected time on Thursdays that everybody met and had that time together. And then in January, we did some professional development with the talent development team about data-driven instruction. We went through our professional development about what targeted small groups would look like. And then how, then I felt like in January, we needed to look at that beginning of year, middle of year data and how we could implement that and how to drive our instruction in those small groups and have a time for them to sit down and go over what the trends were that they were seeing and how to plan accordingly as a grade level and as in their own personal classrooms. And so the feedback I got was, it would be great next year if we could combine those two times into one, because it ended up being an extra time for them to meet to go over their data. And so when looking at options for our schedule for next year, we do, I have a protected time on Thursday afternoons for them, it's about an hour and a half, that nothing else happens for them except being able to look at all their data for the week, to be able to look at all their exit tickets and look at what's happening, who's responding to those strategies, and kind of analyze that in preparation for their protected time on Friday mornings, where the trend has been in the past that a lot of our teachers did not have classes scheduled on Fridays. So I said, well, let's just make Fridays our data days. On Friday mornings from 8:30 to 10:30, that's a protected time that we won't have any meeting scheduled during that time. We won't, you know, have any PD at that time. They will get together as a grade level, and after they've had that time on Thursdays to just really dig in and look at their data, they can get together and have that time together as a grade level and discuss, you know, what their trends are seeing, what do they need to tweak for the coming week, and if they're still working on that same standard the next week. And so that was where they were giving that feedback to me, was like, we've got too many meetings on our plate. And I said, okay. So, and we even reduced our staff meetings to once a month. So we only have a once a month staff meeting in Zoom or whatever platform we'll be using next year. And anything else that comes out, it's like a Wednesdays are what I call my midweek updates and reminders. And it's either a short bulleted email of things that they, you know, reminders and upcoming deadlines, or if it's a little bit more than that, then I'll flip out a screencast to them and do it that way. So in hopes to try and give them back that time that they need during the week, that 1 hour, 30 minutes, 45 minutes.
And on that, when they have data, when they're doing these things, do they need to turn anything into you, or is it just strictly like, my question is, what's the accountability? Is there accountability, or I guess, what does that look like?
Yeah, we had a spreadsheet that they work through, and they would put in their results for that standard, that exit ticket on that standard. Because we have they might do quick checks throughout the week, but that on Thursdays was when they would do a grade level or a, what's the word I'm looking for? because they would do quick checks with their below basic and basic students on their levels, but then we'd have a grade level standard exit ticket that was what the expectation was for that standard, that everybody would, all those students would take an exit ticket on. And then they would go through and they would record the results and break it down, you know, who were the students that were still below grade level expectation on that standard, who met it, who exceeded it. And then they had some just questions that prompted some, you know, analyzing there, you know, what kind of trends were they seeing? Why do they think those students who didn't master it, what happened? And it was neat to be able to see them go through and see their thought process. And plus they had that already, they'll have all that prepared for when they meet together on Fridays. That was one thing that they gave feedback about this year, is that they didn't really have the time to prepare that before they met with their teams to talk about their data. So trying to give them that protected time to analyze their own data and go over that before they meet together on Fridays. And then for their PLC, as a grade level, they would work on the standard that they were going to be addressing, and then they would show how they were breaking that down in that solo model. You know, how are they addressing the standard for the below basic students, your proficient and your advanced?
So it still sounds like there's a ton of teacher autonomy within that. You're just asking some basic questions, which is awesome, because one of the things I was going to talk about was one of the studies I found said that teachers who have a high autonomy in their own classroom, it says teacher empowerment and decision-making are strongly correlated to teacher morale. So the more empowerment they have and the more decision-making they have, the stronger the morale is. So it sounds like what you're asking of them is super basic and not overwhelming, but yet still giving them that opportunity to reflect and have that empowerment and decision-making within their own classroom, which is fantastic. So wow, it sounds like you're doing a million things amazing and right, and it's only your first year of being this administrator. I can't wait to hear and see all the things that you do in years to come. But before I let you go, is there anything else about teacher morale that we should just know about or that you'd like to share, just anything like that?
I think when it comes down to it, I think back, in Georgia, I transferred around a lot, taught in different school systems, different districts, because my husband's job kind of moved us around a good bit. And I've had lots of administrative examples to pull from. And I'll be honest with you, when I came to Alabama and started teaching virtually, I was burnt out. I'm not going back to brick and mortar. I'm done. I'm not going back into the public school system. I'm done, because I felt underappreciated, undervalued, and what effort I was putting forth was not being recognized. And that when I started working with, and I have to sing Kaylee Marble's praises, because she was a breath of fresh air when it came to an administrator. I had never worked with someone so wonderful, who've made you feel so appreciated and so valued. And I just try and put forth that same effort that she did, because it goes a long way when somebody tells you a sincere thank you, that recognizes and sends you a quick email that says, you know what, that 15 minutes in your class was amazing because what I saw here, here, and here. Thank you for what you're doing for our students. And that's just, I want to be very sincere when I let my teachers know what an awesome job that they're doing. And they worked really hard this year. We did a lot of new things and a lot of changes, and they rolled with the punches, and I'm super excited about rolling out next year and setting new goals and just watching them, you know, roll over it. It's teachers like Stacy and the team that she works with. They're very inspiring to watch as they think outside the box, and they just take it and roll with it. So I think that's been the biggest key in our morale this year, was just I wanted to make them feel the way I felt when I came back to when I entered virtual education. I found my passion for teaching again. I wanted to be in the, work with the students again. In fact, the second year that, actually my third year, when they asked me about being a full-time lead, I said, no, I don't want to leave the classroom. So that's how much, my first year back in virtual education, or my first year in virtual education, helped me reclaim my passion for teaching and enjoy what I was doing and remember why I went into this profession. And that's my desire each day, is to help my teachers enjoy what they're doing and have a love for what they're doing and the difference that they're making for our students in Alabama. Because, up until this year, we were the only public school option in the state of Alabama, and now we have two in the state of Alabama. So
that's exciting, and I love how you seem so passionate about education in general, but so passionate about your teachers and just want to have that connection with them, and you're wanting to foster those connections with them. And I love that. It was really an honor to talk to you, and I appreciate you hopping on and sharing your wisdom and passion with all of us. So thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed it.
Wow. You probably heard, but the secret sister idea was my absolute favorite from Kelly. Unfortunately, I'm now a specialist for the talent development community, which I absolutely love, don't get me wrong. But I just didn't get a chance to push this at my school before I left. But you should. As you heard, Alabama started this strategy in November of last year, so it's not too late. Now on deck is Stacy Dillon. She was on the podcast last season, and she talked about her favorite engagement strategies, which was awesome. And if you aren't following her on TikTok, Instagram, or anywhere else, well, you should be. All of her tags are in the description of this podcast. Hit her up. You won't regret it. But now let's listen to her and her strategies that she uses to raise morale in her classroom with her students.
My name is Stacy Dillon, and I teach fifth grade at Alabama Virtual Academy. This past year was my first year as a virtual teacher, so I'm getting ready to start my second year, and I am super excited.
Well, I'm excited for you. I'll probably include this into intro as well, but you won Teacher of the Year. You're going to be the ambassador for your school this next coming year. You got a lot of things going for you, so you're an expert at this topic of talking about morale. So just how do you, coming into a virtual classroom seems daunting all up in itself, but how did you foster a high morale to where your kids wanted to come to your class?
It definitely wasn't instant. I think probably my first month, they were probably like, who is this lady and why do I have to come sit with her? But I think the biggest thing was taking the things that I used in my brick and mortar classroom and making them work. Because I think that's one of the biggest things that I've learned, is if it works in brick and mortar, it'll work for virtual. You just may have to do some adjusting to make it fit, but it will work. Even though you're not seeing them and physically every day, they're on camera, but you're not in a physical classroom with them every day. They're kids. I teach fifth grade, and some of them, think they are grown at times, but I can tell them to kiss their brain and they get just as excited about it. So, and I think that was advice that my lead teacher gave me first coming in. She was like, remember they're fifth grade, but they still love that stuff. And so I started with small things like that. Kiss your brain, pulling out pom-poms, and patting yourself on the back, which seems so dorky and goofy for fifth grade to me at first, because I wasn't a fifth grade teacher. I taught second grade. I taught pre-K. And so I was like, they're not going to like this stuff that I did, but they do. So I think it just started with that and then grew from there to taking the bigger things and transforming them as well.
And I couldn't agree with you more on that. I did K-12 clubs this past year, and I did all the fitness clubs. And we talked about health and fitness. And one of our last sessions, and they were divided up into grade bands, so fourth and fifth, and then middle school, and then high school. Mm-hmm. And in all of those, I did the same thing. We did a virtual field day. And So we did like a high jump, and I had these different characters like Sonic and Mario. And I was really concerned that my high school group was going to be like, this is so lame. And Corona might have been on my side because they did say this was the goopiest thing or the most corniest thing that we've ever done. But it was also the most entertaining thing they've ever done in a Blackboard collaborate in a virtual classroom. So they still loved it, and I didn't have to pull any legs to get them to be involved. Mm-hmm. And we did like a ring toss. I just had some rings on the board, and they just like dragged them over. And then I would be like, oh no, you're too strong. And I just keep dragging it off the screen.
Well, I think one of the biggest things is not being afraid to like, to do something that they don't like. Like if you go in there and you do it and they don't like it, like just don't do it again. But you never know, like try it. You might get in there and be really surprised. Something super simple that you think they're going to think is, you know, silly or something, they may love it. And so I think that was a big thing too. I tend to be very self-conscious sometimes. And so I'm like, oh, I don't want to get in there and then think I'm lame or something like that. And so that's been like, once I got over that and I was like, you know, they're in fifth, they're going to love me no matter what. If I bring this activity in here that they absolutely hate, they're not going to be like, oh, I'm never going to her class again. They're still going to come back. So don't be afraid to try things. I think that's been huge because like I said, there were some things that took me around in October, we did like a candy themed lesson, and like every time they finished a problem, they got to add a piece of candy to their basket. It took me like 5 minutes. I was really busy that week, and I was like, okay, they're probably gonna think this is really weird, but that's okay. They loved it. And so it's just little things like that that sometimes you feel like, oh, they're too big for this, or they're gonna think this is silly. Just try it, because you never know.
And so with that, maybe we'll do a brainstorming thing. So I remember in a traditional classroom, the first few days of school, we would do introduction activities. I remember one year I had a paper plate with Play-Doh on it, and I had to make something that they felt described them or an interest that they like. Do you do anything like that at the very beginning of the year to help you get to know your kids and for your kids to get to know each other?
So this past year, my first year, I started in September, so I didn't even get them at the beginning of the year, which made this task even a little more difficult. But yes, we still did things like that. So I found out very quickly during like my first week of teaching, every class, they were raising their hand, Miss Dillon, can I show you my dog? Miss Dillon, can I show you my cat? Miss Dillon, I play baseball. Miss Dillon. And so what I started doing was with the pets, we had a pet of the day in every class. So they got to email me their pets, and they never knew when their pet was going to pop up. So that was one they wanted to come to class because they're like, today might be my day to share about my dog or my cat I had hamsters. I had all kinds of pets. And so it was right after our introduction slide, we'd work our do now problem, and then there's our pet of the week. And so they would get to share about, they get, 2 or 3 minutes to share about their pet. And then I also did some slides, and I think I've seen some other virtual teachers posting on Instagram doing similar things, but I would do a slide with just boxes that said, like, I play a sport, I like to play outside, I play video games, I have pets, I have siblings, and I'd give them 2 minutes to put their name in any boxes that apply to them. And that was a really quick way for me to see, okay, she plays softball. Okay. He really likes to play Roblox, and just learning those little things about them. And I think just one of the biggest things is bringing those things up. Like I had one student who was really big into softball. And so every once in a while, I just throw that in there and they just light up when you remember those little details. But I found those slides to be super helpful since I didn't get to do any of those beginning of the year activities that I'll get to do this year. I was able to incorporate those in our regular lessons every day.
So is there anything in addition that you're hoping to do at the beginning of this coming year that you didn't get to do last year?
Yeah, I'm hoping to come up with slides for them to fill out where they can share about themselves with some different questions, and then space for them to just share anything else that I didn't ask about. I may come up with some other things. That's kind of what I'm thinking now. Another thing that we did as a fifth grade level this year was we did a social block, which was another great chance for us to get to know each other and for the students to get to know each other. Because a lot of times in class, they're interacting with each other, especially if we're doing group work, but it's all, you know, it's about our schoolwork. So we started a social block every Monday afternoon, and the whole thing was just games. Games or coloring pages, or we had like a teacher lounge where they could just go sit in a breakout room with us and talk to us. And so that was really cool because they actually got to form, instead of just like a classroom relationship, they got to form more of those friendships, and not only with the kids in their class, but across the whole level, whole grade level, which was really nice. And I learned a lot about them in those scenarios too, because that gave me a chance to just go sit in a breakout room with, you know, one group of three or four students for 5 minutes and then go to another group. And I'm not teaching at that moment. I'm just talking to them and getting to know them. And so I found that to be really helpful too. And all, like I said, as a grade level, we were all able to engage in that. So that was really nice.
That's a great idea. I attended Marzano training this past week, and the big thing was teams. And I don't know if they had that intentional, but so I got this book about student teams. And So I love that idea of having a social block, because I'm sure you have to do them too, these enduring connection calls. Mm-hmm. Well, yes. My hope is to do a block like that every day and invite those teams to that group and get to talk with them and play with them and have them play with each other. So you just gave me you and your entire fifth grade team gave me this brilliant idea of things that I can do with them during that time. Another thing that building morale seems to have a connection of trust with each other and with the teacher, obviously, and being happy and coming to class. I know we talked during your last episode about how you do Fan Mail Friday and your class dojo. Is that something you're planning on still doing this coming year as well?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Yes.
All right. Awesome. So definitely that as well. And sometimes I feel that I'm not doing a very good job at this. And I felt this way before in my college courses, that I was just a name on a roster. And so what I try to avoid is my students feeling like they're just a name on a participant list. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you do in addition to anything that helps your students feel like they're more than just a name?
Well, I definitely, the Fan Mail Friday is probably one of my favorite things for that. And I try to make, every student gets at least one of those from me, but I try to do more than one when I can. But I try to take notes during class. If I notice somebody did something like, oh, they were such a good friend, they really helped, you know, that person came in and said they weren't having a good, you know, sometimes a child will come in and say, I'm kind of sad today. And I may be, you know, talking to somebody else and not instantly see it in the chat. And I'll have one of my other sweet babies will come in there and say, I'm so sorry you're sad. Is there something we could do? You know, and so if I see somebody be a really good friend or do something, like, I try to make notes of that and recognize that we all want to be recognized when we do well. And, you know, that's the same with our kids. They're not any different than us. And so I think that's one of the biggest things, you know, whether it be with Fan Mail Friday, sometimes I'll just send them a quick email after class, like, hey, thank you for being such a great friend. Or, hey, I saw how well you led your group in our group work today. I'm so proud of you. That's awesome. But, you know, I think it's all about relationships. And one of my biggest fears when I came into the virtual world was that I was going to lose that aspect of teaching. Cause that's what I love. I love the relationships. And when I realized that wasn't the case, that's now become something I'm super passionate about, because you don't have to lose that. In fact, like I said over and over again, I feel closer to my students and my families now than I ever did in brick and mortar. And I think that's such a big part of it, because when they realize that you're listening to them and they feel heard, they do have that bond with you and they want to come to class and they want to do well for you. So I think that's a big thing too, is just recognizing when they do well, recognizing when they might need help and reaching out, because sometimes they're not going to reach out to you. Or just when they feel seen and heard, I think that's the biggest thing. Sometimes they might mention in passing, oh, my cat's not feeling well today. And I try to remember that so that when they come to class the next day, I can say, hey, so-and-so, how's your cat doing? Are they feeling any better? And just, it seems insignificant, but it's huge to them.
I totally agree with you. I was worried about losing the relationships too. This past year, I started using webcams a lot more, and I'm excited about when we do get Neuro, now that that's being pushed back a little bit. But I'm excited when we have that, because it'll make that a lot easier. We'll all see each other. And I think that will help with morale as well. But I did start using them more often this year in Blackboard Collaborate. And I remember running into one of my students in town, and I had no idea that he lived in the same town, because they're all over the state and I just lose track. But I remember running into him in town and we were both like, we know each other. And we ran up to each other and hugged, and it was surreal, and I've never had that before. And since leaving brick and mortar, and because none of them have lived in my town before, so it was really nice to feel like, hey, this connection is still there, and we still see each other. And when we see each other, we don't pretend like we don't see each other. So that was exciting. So you mentioned how you keep notes of things and you recognize those things. And you mentioned earlier that you're thinking about filling out a slide, and I've had that same thought, but then I thought, as a teacher, I'm gonna have to go through every single slide. What would be nice is that if I could combine them, but without making it redundant. But what would be really cool is, yes, they fill out a slide, so that way I could share them in class, but then also have like a Google survey, and they fill out their interests, and that way I just can see the similarities between my students. Like, oh, all of these kids are into karate, or all of these kids are into art, you know, or something like that. What are your ideas on that? Just picking your brain.
I'm still trying to decide exactly how I want to do that. And that's something I've been playing with. I've been looking at Google Forms, or checking for other websites that might have like a cool format for that. I thought about doing Flipgrid, but the I just don't know how many of them are going to have a account already set up on there and might need help with it. So,
so we're getting this new thing called ClassLink. And it connects to all our kids that have Microsoft accounts already. So as long as they know what their email is, which you could find out through a mail merge, through an omnibus, and then their password is whatever password is to get onto the OLS. Mm-hmm. So then they could make that Flipgrid on their ClassLink a single sign-on, and they're just there. So that's an idea. But anyway,
I like Flipgrid because I get to see them.
Well, no, yeah, so it connects to Flipgrid.
That's
it's like a Clever.
Yes.
So that way they can log into, because one of the things on Flipgrid is, one of the ways to log in is through their Microsoft account.
Yes. And that's why I was kind of thinking about Flipgrid, so that, you know, I could see them all at the beginning of the year and actually hear their voices. And, you know, even if I did a slide out or anything, I was going to try to have them send in a picture or something, but Flipgrid's definitely on my list, because I think it would be cool to hear their voice as well. But then I always try to provide an alternative, because I have some kids that just don't want to be on camera, and like I never want them to feel pressured like they have to do that. So I usually try to have an alternative for anybody that isn't comfortable with that, because I probably would have been that kid when I was in elementary school. Believe I'm not shy at all now, but I was terrified as a small child to do anything like that. So I'm still working that out. I'll definitely share when I figure out exactly how I'm going to do all that. But I am excited, to get to have them from the beginning of the year this year. 'Cause even though I only missed a month this past year, that first month is a lot. You do a lot in that first month to get to know them. And so I kind of had to get creative with ways to incorporate it into my everyday lessons. So I'm excited to have that time this year.
Awesome. Another thing mentioned is to increase morale is seeking out students who are doing poorly. Mm-hmm. And how do you do that? And what do you do? So once you found them, once you found your students who are doing poorly,
yes.
What do you do?
So those students, I have a whiteboard right in front of me where I'm sitting right now. And I usually have their initials up there. And I call them once a week. So first of all, instead of the every 30 days, they get called once a week. And then I set up one-on-one sessions with them. And I've really found those one-on-one sessions. That's one of my favorite things to do because, you know, sometimes the students who are not doing well, they can get lost in the shuffle in a big class if you're not, you know, it's hard, you know, when you have a class full, sometimes they're not going to be the first to answer. They're not going to be the ones to ask questions most of the time. And I have some kids that are like that, that would never speak up in a class setting. But when I get them in there in that one-on-one and they're not worried about their peers or anything like that, they'll actually talk to me and that's where I can get a lot done. So they get weekly phone calls. I set up one-on-one sessions with them. And if I see that there's something specific that they're struggling with, then I'll work on that with them. Sometimes I'll just reach out to them and I'll be like, hey, I notice you might need help with these three. Is there one in particular that you really want me to work on? And I'll give them some control over that sometimes. And then I found that they are more likely to ask me questions when it's just the two of us, and so they really get to understand that why it's not just sitting there and watching me work problems or you know, whatever topic standard we're working on. They're more likely to ask questions when it's just the two of us, so that's been one of my favorite tools. And then I still use GoFormative when it's just a one-on-one session. Not because I'm grading their an exit ticket on a one-on-one session, but I like to use GoFormative for those one-on-one sessions so I can track their progress. If we've been doing one-on-one sessions for 6 weeks, I want to know how far they've come from week one to week six. But I think that, you know, it goes back to making them feel seen and heard. And if you're reaching out to them, if you're calling them to check on them once a week, hey, is there anything new in the curriculum that you've come across this past week that you need my help with? Or do you want to continue working on this? And giving them a little bit of that control, they do feel seen. They're not falling in the cracks. They're not getting lost in the shuffle. Even though they are seeing that as, okay, my teacher sees me struggling and they care and they're reaching out to help me. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just keeping them on your radar. Don't help them 1 week and then never call again.
Yeah. You know. And you talk to your kids, like these weekly calls, you're talking to the kids. You also talk to their parents during that time too?
Or, yes.
Okay. That's something I talk a lot to the parents. So, and I need to talk more to my students when I call. So that's something that I've come to terms with this summer on my reflections. Like, yeah, I do talk to my students, but I'm talking to their parents more, and they are a big advocate for their kid, and they need to be on board, and I do need to talk to them, but I also need to make a more of an effort to talk to my students as well. So
yeah. I like to talk to the student first and then in the conversation with the parent, so I can reflect on what I'm seeing, what the students told me, and okay, what are you seeing? And let's get a whole picture.
And do your parents just know that when you call that you're expecting to talk to the kid first, or how do you,
I mean, once I start doing it every week, they do, but at first, no. So, you know, I'll call and I'll say, hey, this is Miss Dillon with Alabama Virtual Academy. I'm so-and-so's teacher, and I was wondering if they had just a minute to talk to me, and I'd love to talk to you after I talk to them. And I usually say, I just checking in with them and seeing how things are going with school, so they know I'm not, like, calling because they did something bad or anything like that. So.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I knew that was my question. I know other people are going to be like, okay, well, how do you facilitate that? And then lastly, another, and we've talked a little bit about that, but there's some other things that you hit on without knowing it, but one of those things is validate all comments and questions, and it sounds like you do that, and your kids are doing that too, which is awesome. Another one is just asking students for help, but I'm sure we all do that. There was a TikTok about it. A teacher forgetting like what 9 times 6 was, and Johnny, do you know? And so asking students to help whenever you don't know. And then the last one is celebrating students or class accomplishments. And so we talked a little bit about how you're celebrating individual students, but do you do anything to celebrate like a class accomplishment, whatever that may be? The first thing that comes to mind is like test growth, but you might be thinking of something else.
Well, even like little daily accomplishments, like I'm trying to think of an example, but I have a celebration corner. This past year I sent out an email every Friday, had their newsletter, and it had a celebration corner on it. Now that I'm starting from the beginning this year, I'm working on like a cute little newsletter to email out every week that'll have that celebration corner in the bottom as well. But yeah, I do like weekly, celebrations. Like, hey, we had, 6 people in our class finish our reading log this week, or we had, 15 people got 50 dojo points, hit 50 dojo points this week, or, whatever it may be, for test scores. And, I try to go a little more all out. I managed to talk all my 5th grade teachers into pieing ourselves in the face this past time, which was a big hit. Hopefully they continue to go along with my antics. I don't think I'm completely lost it. But the kids really liked that. It was silly. Was really cold, but it was worth it.
Your principal loved it. She's like, I don't know why I was worried about tests and all that. My teachers just stepped it up for their kids, and I guess your grade and a couple other grades did it as well. So
yes,
that's really cool. Is there anything else that you guys or you as a grade or just you as a Miss Dillon?
The MAP test before that, like we did a party we did the pie in the faces last time. Before that, we did like a party on Zoom. So we all always try to offer some kind of incentive for, you know, showing up to take it and then taking your time. And then we send out certificates to every student that hit their growth goals for the end of the year as well. So we try to have a little incentive every time so that, and it doesn't feel maybe quite as stressful. We talk to them about how it's not graded, you know, but if you take your time, do your best, you're going to get, you know, we're going to do whatever fun thing at the end. So we try to give them something fun to look forward to. So maybe it doesn't feel quite as stressful, but also makes them want to show up and take it. Not just dip out. So
yeah, your principal mentioned pizza and a movie, and I was like, I'm gonna steal that for any of my kids who make growth or hit their year mark, stay in that percentile range or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what it is, but I stole that from her. So I love all the things that you guys are doing. So go ahead. Sorry, were you gonna add something?
Oh, no.
Okay, cool. All right, well, sorry, let me start over. Okay, is there anything else about morale, raising your classroom morale, helping students even individually or as a whole that you do or that should be mentioned that we just didn't talk about?
I think the biggest thing, and it can be done in different ways, is making sure they feel seen and feel heard, them and their parents. And I think that's the biggest thing. And you can do that in all different ways, whether it's class dojo or a party or something silly or just doing fun lessons, acknowledging anything they tell you. Like I said, mine will come into class and the first thing they tell me is, my cat threw up this morning. And That might seem super beautiful. Insignificant. I know. But if you remember that the next day and say, hey, I hope your cat's feeling better, that's big to them. And so I think that's the biggest thing is not getting so caught up in what seems big to us and just pay attention to the little things, make them feel seen and heard. And I think that kind of sums up everything.
I agree completely. And I can't imagine the thing that high school or middle school things are hearing about. My boyfriend broke up with me, or Harry Styles got a new girl. You know, I don't even know what they're into anymore, but you're right. Being seen and heard is, even as a teacher, we want that. We want to be seen. We want to be heard. We want to be part of the process. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing. So I'm glad that I reached out to you about all of this, because it sounds like you're doing everything right already. Thank you so much for listening. In case I failed to mention this or imply this, the reason high morale is so important is because it leads to happiness. Research time and time again proves that when people are happy, they are more effective. When teachers specifically are happy, they are more effective, which leads to more academic gains. This also holds true for your students. When they are happy, they are more open to learning. Please head over to our social media pages and share which idea was your favorite. Which idea are you wanting to tell your team or administration about? Do you have other ideas to share? Please share them. As you go into next week, please go to your administration team or class and share your favorites to raise morale. Be brave and take this risk, which I hope leads to more fun. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time. Bye.